child, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? I'm the
allowed to talk about where we're sitting.
Yeah, okay. we can tell them where we're sitting. The intros are always the worst, Lids, because you're like, welcome.
But anyway, I don't know you.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, welcome, Lydia O'Donnell, to Inside Running Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Sid. I'm so excited to be here and talking to you.
Yeah, it's awesome. Just to set the scene, we are sitting in the comfort of Fitzroy Foot and Ankle Clinic. We have a phone with a microphone resting on a shockwave therapy machine.
Sitting in the high chair.
Lids is in the patient chair. And I've gone from podiatrist to podcaster. So nice little pod shift there. But this is our little neck of the woods for Lids and I. We both live and train and work in the inner north. So I feel it's kind of appropriate that we're
this
here.
Is perfect.
Brunswick Street, Fitzroy. No better place to be. thanks for giving up a bit of your time. We've got a massive agenda. So I reckon we'll get into it. There's a bit to cover. But I'm really excited because, there's a lot to pick your brain on, and we've just got so much that through you we can offer our listeners. I think you are a very resourceful little person there.
Thank you.
Most of the Inside Running podcast interviews start in a kind of conventional way, and it's interesting because the reins have been let off me a little bit. I can go a little bit rogue according to Brady, but I do feel that I should stick to some of the consistency and introduce you via your PBs just to give the listeners a bit of insight into the kind of athlete you are on a performance level. The thing about this, and I was thinking this morning, when we come full circle and we learn more and more about you and we uncover a lot of the really interesting stuff, we're going to look back and it's going to be interesting and kind of almost comical that we defined you by your PBs, because what I love most about you is that there's so many layers and there's so much to you, and the fact that we open with definitions of personal best times, we're going to look back and it's going to seem a bit irrelevant, but that's okay. I feel like we have to get through the entree to get to the main and to get to the dessert, and that's where the good stuff is. But I'm going to introduce you via your personal best times on a performance level, and then we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty stuff. So what I've got down, and correct me if I'm wrong, 800 metres, you've bowled out at 2:11.94. You ran that in Hamilton.
Yep, a little while ago.
Yep. I actually don't have the years, so if you want to add in the years.
I'd say that was probably about 10 years ago.
All right, 10 years, cool, roughly. The 1500, you've run a 4:22 and you ran that in Auckland. For the mile, you've run a 4:58, and kudos to you for having a mile time, because how many marathoners and half marathoners like us have a mile time?
That was amongst that crazy Steigen race. I didn't even know my time.
Yeah, I want to get, I'd love to pick your brain a bit about your Steigen experience, for sure. And that's a 4:58. The 3K, you've run 9:14, you ran that in Wellington. For the 5,000 metres you've run very recently, and we're definitely going to get into this a bit later, 15 minutes and 42 seconds at Lakeside Stadium, backed up by another 15 minute and 42 second performance 2 days ago at Melbourne Uni.
Like, consistency.
Absolutely stellar 5K time there. Amazing.
Thank you.
10,000 metres I've got in Auckland, 33 minutes 22. Oh, no, sorry, it wasn't running Auckland. That's your 10,000-metre track time, 33:22, and that was at Zatopek B last year at Aberfeldy, I think it is.
Yep.
Yep, cool. 10K road, 34:19. And couldn't find a 15K road time, but your half marathon is a scintillating 72-minute 44 run on the arguably fast but kind of arduous course at Burnley with all the twists and, well, I guess all the U-turns. And then for the full marathon, you've run a 2:38:33 done at Melbourne in 2019.
Yeah.
There we go.
Thank you. Yeah, some of those PBs I didn't even know.
Yeah.
So that's good to hear them.
And I think that's you to a T, is that the numbers and the stats just don't really mean that much to you. And that's what I want to get into, and that's what I want to pick apart. But I don't know, it's an inside running thing. We do introduce people by their PBs, but it also does give listeners a bit of insight into the athlete.
Yeah.
So Tell us a bit more about Lydia, dialing right back to the early days in New Zealand, where you grew up, what your early years entailed, and how you got your start in running.
Yeah, cool. So thanks, Soph. What a great introduction. I have been running my whole life, really. I started little athletics. I know that's what you call it over here. When I was about 7 years old, and at the time, ballet was really my focus. And so as a kid, I kind of grew up dreaming to be a professional dancer, which now, if you see my flexibility, is a bit of a joke. And then I really started taking running, I'd say not serious, but more seriously when I got to high school. I was picked up by an amazing coach who was just a PE teacher at our school, but she also was a champion runner. So Rosemary Wright, she won the 800 of the Commonwealth Games. I'm not sure which games it was, but a wee while ago now, and she actually held the record until recently. So she was an amazing athlete herself, but she also had a huge passion for the sport and for teaching young girls to purely just love it. So she really built that relationship with me to really just put your love for the sport first, and then kind of everything else will come after. And so throughout high school, we had an amazing group of girls. I'd say there's about 15 girls in our squad, and we saw running as a social event. We'd go along to training and it was just to hang out with each other, and yes, we'd push each other, but we weren't there to break times or win medals. It was purely just to be having fun. And throughout that experience of high school, it really taught those kind of key life skills of like being determined, being focused, and just like really stepping stones to grow into an adult. And then so I like loved running, and I wanted to be a runner growing up, but I really didn't think it was possible. And especially having running as a career, I just never thought that was something that actually happened. And so I left high school in 2017, and then January of 2018 I headed over to America on a high school university scholarship. So I went to a college in Texas, of all places, and I knew a couple of other Kiwis that were over there, so that was probably my key connection to head to that particular college.
Can I just quickly ask, how did you get picked up?
So what's the process? Which that's a great question, because I actually wasn't a very good runner. Like, I was good at high school, but I wasn't national champion at all. I think all through school, like cross country nationals, I was maybe getting top 20. Like, I wasn't that great. But because I had connections at that university, and by my last year of school, I was probably getting a little bit better. I think I ended up national roads, was in third in my last year of school. So I guess by that point I was maybe making a bit of a name for myself, but nothing amazing. So once the school approached me and had a position for me, I grabbed it with both hands. And I thought, you know, to have your entire university paid for, to be able to be training with some of the best in the world, having an amazing coach, I thought that opportunity was something that you just wouldn't let pass. So I took it, and I headed over there, and I was 17 at the time, which now I look back and I'm like, wow, that's pretty young to be moving to the other side of the world by myself.
Had you ever been overseas?
I had been, we'd gone world cross country, secondary school champs with the team to Europe, but never by myself. Like, I'd never travelled alone. And so I got on a plane to head to America alone, which is just crazy. I remember running through the LA airport. I was nearly missing my flight by myself with all my stuff, and I was a kid, really. It was a crazy experience. And so I get to Texas, and it was really nothing like I expected. The program that we were in was pretty crazy. Our coach was very intense, and I'd come from, you know, a high school coach who purely just wanted us to love the sport. Going into that atmosphere where it's all about medals and winning and making it for the team was just so foreign to me. And I just went to a place with running which I didn't love. Like, I to be honest, I was only there for 6 weeks. After 6 weeks, I decided that it wasn't for me and I needed to leave. And there were a few different things that happened to me while I was there that made me want to leave, but I was quite sick at the time as well. But it was, now I look back and it was an experience that definitely taught me a lot about the sport, and about maybe a few negative sides of the sport, because until then, you know, running for me was rainbows and lollipops. Like, it wasn't anything bad. And so opening my eyes up to that was quite, I don't know, it shocked me a bit. And our coach, I remember going out on a long run one of the days after we'd done an indoor race, and we got back and she started crying because we hadn't run fast enough in training. And that moment, I was like, this is... what? Like, that's insane to me. Like, why would your coach be crying because of a training session after a race, especially? And so, yeah, there was a lot going on over there, and Texas is very different culturally to New Zealand, and definitely not as safe as New Zealand. So I decided to head back to NZ, and I think that experience really shocked me and made me rethink the whole world of running. And once I got back to NZ, I decided pretty much to quit running, and I really went down a route of partying and, you know, drinking and doing drugs, and just like a space that I had up until that moment really never saw myself in. And so that experience of going kind of through a really dark time in my life also taught me a lot about myself, and it really led me, as crazy as it was, led me back to running, because I knew how good I felt when I was running and how mentally healthy I am when I'm running and having goals to train towards. And that really pulled me through that dark time and made me realize that that situation and the place where I was living and what I was doing was really not me at all. So it took probably 18 months to kind of realize that. And then when I was about 20, I really started back focusing on running and training again, and trying to take my running a lot more seriously. And I think, yeah, within, I'd say, 6, maybe 8 months of being back running, I was competing at nationals, and I won my first national title. So, which was a junior 5,000, which I think I ran maybe 17, low 17. So I was like, to see the results especially made me be like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. So when you moved back to New Zealand, where did you move to?
I moved home initially back to Mount Maunganui. Tauranga is where I grew up, and I spent probably...
Where's that?
So that's like 3 hours south of Auckland.
Okay.
Yeah, it's, so I grew up...
Obviously,
in place
I'm
for
not
Tauranga.
Asking for myself. I'm asking for the listeners, because, you know, I've totally got my NZ geography nailed.
It's a beautiful, beautiful place, but it's quite a small town. Everyone kind of knows each other, and if you don't have much going on, it's pretty easy to end up in the wrong circles.
Yeah.
So... I did end up in those circles for a while, and then I decided to move to Auckland. I actually got a job up there initially and moved to Auckland when I was about 19, and decided to get into university and start running again and kind of get my life back on track.
Yeah, awesome. And when you enrolled in uni in Auckland,
yep.
Studying?
So I did a Bachelor of Science. I focused on earth sciences and biology.
Yep.
I initially went to university to do medicine, and that was kind of like the goal, purely because I wanted to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought I would do to make a lot of money. And now I look back and, like, that's my last focus, to be honest. But as we all know, medicine is super competitive, and it wasn't really the space I wanted to be in. So, and I just love being outside. So I think earth sciences is what kind of drew me to do that. And my mum's a geography teacher, and I spent my whole childhood outside, you know, and exploring with her. So it was awesome to be able to kind of go and do that at uni for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. So you're a geologist.
I am.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
We're going to explore that on another podcast, because I'm really interested in that. Well, I'm kind of interested in geology, but I'm super interested in you being a geologist. That's just really cool.
I started my master's. I got halfway through my master's in volcanology, and that's probably what lights me up the most, because I just, I find volcanoes so fascinating.
Yeah. Okay, we're definitely going to explore that another time. If we didn't have an agenda that was about 7 pages long, we'd probably go into a bit more now. But thank you for touching on, just giving us context, I guess, to who you are and just some of those early days. Leeds, I've done a bit of research, and I've asked some of the people in our community to share with me a little bit about who you are and what they think of your contribution, I guess, is a nice way to put it, in the running circles. So, get ready to be flattered.
I don't really know what to expect.
Yeah, no, you don't. You've got no idea what this is. You've got no idea that I was doing this. Anyway, a key marketing figure at Nike in the female department says that, "I think it is so important for us to have strong, inspirational female role models in the sport of running. And Lydia is exactly that. Her genuine willingness to coach, educate, and support runners of all abilities while balancing her own elite training is what has made her such a massive part of the Australian and New Zealand running communities." Dave Ridley. Sorry, that was Ash Horriban.
Oh, she's so sweet.
Dave Ridley says, "Lids, she's not your standard runner. She's one of the things I appreciate... Sorry, he says, one of the things I appreciate about Liz is how generous she is with her time and her energy. In a sport that is a bit individualistic at times, Liz relentlessly pursues her own goals while being able to gracefully juggle her coaching, writing, fostering of her community, advocating for women's health and athlete health, sharing her experiences, and being there for other athletes on and off the track. There's not many that willingly give as much as Liz. Mm. She's a legend.
Oh, thanks, Rose. Wow.
Mark Hazy from Hunter, he said, Lydia is an incredible leader both on and off the track. She inspires all levels of runners through her meaningful social media platform. She is well respected in our Hunter running community to the point she accumulated a crowd of about 40 people cheering her every lap at the recent Australian 5K Champs, where she ran an enormous PB.
That community is my life.
Yeah, and we will get to them. There's only two more, but this gives our listeners
really good at taking compliments.
No, this gives our listeners, this is the best kind of way that listeners can get an insight into who you are, because this comes directly from people. Mark Gerges, our mate Gergs, I actually got quite choked up when I read this last night. He said, it's not what Lydia does when she is running well that I admire. Her true character is seen far away from Instagram and social media. When she's had a bad marathon, when it's cold and dark at the track, when she's standing next to me at the start of a race with all the boys and I can see that she's nervous, she pushes it aside and finds the courage to get the job done. She rolls the dice. She's courageous. How nice is that? Yeah. I told Gergs I was going
to
cry.
Tears to my eyes.
I know! And finally, from Riley Wolf at Tempo Journal, we've just heard from him on a very recent Inside Running podcast interview. Riley says, Lydia gives people, both men and women, a tangible example of what you can strive for and how you should approach training and life. She's very open and honest about her successes and her setbacks, and she chases what she wants with complete commitment. I love that Lydia will throw herself into challenging situations, and generally she thrives. So...
I'm
PBs.
So
I know, they're nice, isn't it? Yeah. PBs are nice and they're interesting and they're fun, but when you hear that the people closest to you in your running community speak about you in that kind of way, and they didn't have to say that stuff, and no one's making it up, because I can vouch for all of that.
It means more to me than anything, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think that gives good context to take a next step into you telling us a little bit about what you're doing now with your running, how you're using some of your platforms, be it through Nike, Hunter, Tempo, and I certainly want you to touch on, and you can do it any sort of creative way that you want, your really pivotal work with One Step. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, so I guess starting from the start, what I'm doing at the moment with my own running, I feel like over the last few years I've kind of been through this journey of really wanting to be the best athlete I can be, make teams, crush times, make championships, get results in places that I've kind of wanted to chase my entire life, to now just being like, I just love running. I am fortunate to have this tool to, I guess, access people and teach people and inspire people to also take up running. And I just happen to be okay at it, you know, like, it's awesome that I can go out and compete in these races and get times and get places that I didn't really know if I ever would, because I recently, I guess over the last 6 months, have broken most of my PBs, and that's awesome. But there's so much more to it than that. Like, I just want to inspire people to run, because I know that running teaches you so much more than, it's just not about getting fit, you know. There's so many other things that it can complement in your life and really set direction for you and inspire you to live a really fulfilling, healthy life, and that's kind of what my priority is. So the way that I can do my work through Nike and work with athletes on a daily basis, even just when I'm not even coaching, but just standing next to athletes at Hunter and being able to hopefully inspire them and educate them and just encourage them to do what they're doing, is I'm so lucky to be able to do it. And so through Nike, I've been with Nike for the last 10 years, and I was picked up by Nike as an athlete when I was about 19 years old.
Okay, so you're in Auckland, you're studying geology.
Yeah.
And then How did the Nike thing happen?
So there was an academy that was put together in New Zealand called Stride Academy.
Okay.
And there were three boys and three girls. And the idea of Stride Academy was to get the young athletes who have a lot of potential who aren't heading off to America and support them to stay in the country and give them the tools that they need to, you know, flourish as athletes. Cool. And so I was super lucky to be picked up by the coach, Paul Hamblin, who is still coaching in Auckland. He's got an amazing squad over there. He put me in the squad, and through the academy, we had sponsorship deals, and one of them was with Nike. So
is that Nicky Hamlin's partner?
No.
Is that just the same name?
No, it's just the same name. Oh. So he actually, Paul actually coached Nicky for a while, but no relations.
Sorry, I'm really getting all over the place. Cool, yep, carry on.
And so I was with Stride and with Nike as an athlete from when I was about 19 to 22. And, you know, I wasn't the best in the world. I wasn't racing internationally. I was just an okay runner in New Zealand. And so to have the support that we got was insane. Like, we were getting so well looked after by the brand. And throughout my experience as an athlete with them, my eyes really opened up to kind of this whole world of Nike, yeah, which I didn't even, like, think about really. Mm. That I remember when I was probably must have been a few months before this contract came through with Stride Academy. I went into one of the Nike stores as a young innocent athlete being like, how do you get sponsored by Nike? Like, and I remember the lady behind the desk laughing at me being like, oh, love, it's not never gonna happen.
Doesn't happen through retail.
And I was so ambitious as, you know, a young early 20s. I just had all the hopes and dreams in the world, and I really, really, really thought that all this was going to come true. And it's crazy because a few months later, I got offered this sponsorship, and I'm a huge believer in the power of the mind. And and if you really believe something's going to happen, I'm like 99% sure it will, but you have to, you know, fully focus on it. Anyway, that was just crazy in itself. And then from Nike, being an athlete, they actually offered me a role as a, it was part-time, like, promo sort of role where I was going out and working with athletes, teaching runners what sort of shoes they should be wearing, getting shoes on feet at running events. And at the time, I was very much in the elite competitive world of running, and so I didn't even really know that, you know, 100 people would get together and run on a Saturday morning at Park Run or anything like that. It was just so far from what I was kind of had grown up in. And so that role really opened my eyes up to, wow, other people run. Like, it's not just elites or competitive runners that run.
Yeah.
And so for probably a year and a half, I was really just going out and getting amongst the running communities. And to me, that just like grew my love for working with people who aren't elite mm-hmm. athletes and working with your everyday runner. And whether it is getting shoes on feet or just having a conversation about life and running, to me, that kind of grew my base for wanting to work for the brand more and work more in the running world.
It's where all the stories lie.
Yeah.
Recreational runners.
Yeah, really opened my eyes. And, it, like, to be honest, a lot of these runners were kind of your old school joggers, you know, maybe your middle-aged joggers who just, like, love going out for a run the weekend, which the whole running community, to me, has changed a lot in the last few years. But at the time, it was, like, pretty old school, but I loved that, you know. And those middle-aged joggers were teaching me a lot about running too, so it was win-win. And so after my, 18 months of 2 years in that role, I had already experienced the world of Nike and how amazing it was and how it really fitted into my kind of my beliefs and what I wanted to do with the world. And it made me really second guess what I was doing with my studying, and hence why I ended up taking a step back from my master's and kind of chasing this dream for working with Nike. Mm-hmm. And so within maybe another 6 months, I had a full-time role, which was it was still contracted, but it was like a marketing role. So I was going in and kind of being like a sidekick to our marketing manager. And she was amazing because she had full belief in, like, my experience and knowledge with runners and the running community, and kind of, like, handed anything running over to me. So it was awesome to do that. And then from there, I just kind of worked my way up. And when I left Nike, it would have been 2 years ago now, I was in the brand manager position. So
incredible.
It's kind of cool to be able to work your way and see the results in your career in that position as well. And it's definitely something that when I first entered the brand, when I was as an employee at 22, I was like, oh, I want to be brand manager, having no marketing experience. I just kind of like worked my way and had that belief and got there. And then once I got there, I realized it was probably a bit too much to handle with how much training and other work I had on, so had to take a step back.
But doesn't it just go to show, like, and I think about this stuff all the time, like, absolutely no disrespect to bachelor degrees at university, and they are critical and they're important and they're, you know, all that sort of stuff, but
yeah,
when you've got the attitude and you've got the skill set and you've got the mindset and you've got that, I can do this and this is the change I want to affect and all of that, you know, yeah, you next to somebody with a four-year marketing degree and majoring in business and majoring in advertising and A, B and C, mm-hmm, you know, you've got the attitude and you've got that, and also just that personal experience of
totally
being
that
a runner.
I think as a runner, like, only runners get runners, you know?
Absolutely.
And so when I had put a campaign together for any shoe, like our running shoe, and we had to sell it to the consumer, I just like knew how the consumer thinks. I know where they are, where they're hanging out, what they're thinking, how they respond to different things, and I think that was definitely what helped me kind of work my way in there.
Yeah, so interesting. So at what point did you think, okay, this, I mean, you would have been working, you know, full-time in a marketing role, a lot of travel, I would imagine,
yeah,
be it domestic, international. At what point and what inspired you to think, hang on, right now, this is a bit too much on my plate, mm-hmm, considering what I want to pursue with my athletic goals? When did that happen and how did it look?
I think my last probably year in the marketing team, I definitely knew that it was a lot to handle. And but I was in a position where I thought I was Wonder Woman. I thought I could do anything and everything was going to be fine and I was going to be able to keep up with it. And so I was brand manager, which was a very high pressure job. I was also coaching a high school. I was trying to do my own online coaching and I was trying to do my own training. So my days were like so jam packed to the point where I wasn't even sleeping at night because I was on such an endorphin rush where my adrenaline was just so high because of the stress that I've been under all day. And I was pumping 5 coffees a day and it just was a really unhealthy lifestyle that I was living. And it wasn't until I just remember like waking up one day and I'd been coaching and I was just like looked in the mirror and I remember thinking I just looked so old and unhealthy. Like there were many things that were going on in my body. Like my hair was all falling out. I had this like really bad twitching eye, which I'd had for 6 months. I had lost my period for 9 months. There was just so many different things that were going on with my physical body that were signs that I was just like crushing. And so at that time I just had to kind of be true to myself and realize that yes, it's an amazing job and one that people would die for, and I've worked my butt off to get there, but nothing is more important than your health, you know, like my health was the most important thing.
And the irony of living every day to promote other people's health and well-being,
mm,
and totally ignoring your own.
Totally. Mm. Yeah, that's it. And yeah, it's just the stress that I was under. So I ended up, I guess, what people would call chronic fatigue or adrenal fatigue, it was definitely a situation where I was just so so fatigued that I ended up leaving and sleeping for probably 3 months, just like really pulled back the running and just focused on my health and trying to get my body under control, and just pretty much slept for like 3 months.
What month and years was this roughly? 2018? 2017.
Yeah, end of 2017.
Okay.
Yeah.
So which year were you going to run Gold Coast Half or Gold Coast Marathon? Yeah, and you ended up in hospital. Was that that? And when you were in hospital?
Yes. Yep. That was then. Was that? Yes.
2017.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it was actually. Yeah. So, yeah, that was it. I was training for the marathon.
That's right.
And
sorry, that's just come to me then.
No,
I haven't got that.
I actually forgot about that as well, which is crazy. Yeah. Now I look back, I'm like, I don't really know what I was thinking. I was so sick and trying to train for a marathon. And the day that I quit work, I went back home to my parents' house and decided to just kind of have a weekend of just relaxing and letting my mind ease. And the next day I started getting stomach cramps and really bad pain through my stomach. And it turned out that I had appendicitis.
That's right.
And
you were something, yeah.
Yeah, and I asked the doctors, I was like, is there any, you know, link between stress and getting appendicitis? Yeah. Or, you know, and they were kind of like, no. But, like, to this day, I believe that Absolutely. It was definitely the stress of what I was going under that kind of led my body to just falling apart. And
it's like, so, if you're not going to shut me down, I'll shut myself down.
Yeah. Which sucked at the time. And I remember the doctor coming in being like, oh, you've got appendicitis. We're going to have surgery in a few hours. And I was like, oh, okay. And this was 4 weeks before Gold Coast Marathon. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Like, get the appendix out. Few days rest, I'll be back training, I'm going to run a marathon. I think it was 3 or 4 weeks, and I remember the doctor laughing at me being like, you're not running a marathon in 3 weeks. And I started just crying because I'd done so much work to get to that point. And the doctor walked out, and because our city's quite small, everyone kind of knows you around, he came in like a couple of hours later and he's like, oh, I didn't realise like you were trying to win the marathon. And I was like, oh, by this time I kind of processed it. I was like,
it's fine, mate.
It is what it is.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Before we go too far in another direction, talk to us about One Step. Mm-hmm. How did it come about? What does it specifically entail? Where's it at the moment? And
yeah, so One Step is something that sits so deep in my heart, and it's something that I started with a friend back in Auckland when I was actually kind of coming out of Nike. And at Nike, I was not only in the brand team, but I was also the Nike run coach. So I was out in the community with runners, you know, multiple times in the week. And we had an amazing group over there in community of maybe 100 to 150 runners that I worked with, you know, quite regularly. And we were really close. And so when we kind of stepped away from that direction with Nike, I was like, well, I'd love to keep a community going in Auckland and keep people together. But what I really want to do is tap into those people who are maybe not in the running world at the moment, who may be, you know, suffering from mental health issues, and I know for a fact how good running can be for mental health, and I'd love to get those people involved in what I'm doing. So we started One Step as a mental health awareness community, but it was the idea was to get people not just running but walking, just active, to help with depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
And for me, I just have like such a huge passion for this, because running saved me when I was in a dark place. It pulled me out from where I was, because I knew, you know, that the setting goals, having something to work towards, having a purpose every day, whether it is just getting up and going for a 15-minute walk, you know, like
just getting to your front door.
Exactly, having something definitely just helps the mind tick over and gives you that direction for your entire life. And so I just wanted to kind of share that, I guess, idea of running to the world. And so we invited people to come and run with us at One Step in Auckland, and it was started off pretty small, because I'd come from Nike, which, you know, we had 150 people turning up. That's kind of what I expected, and it was far from that. But
how did you tell people?
It was purely just through social media. Yep. And word of mouth, I guess, but mostly just through social media. And initially, I was a little bit disheartened, because we were only getting, you know, 10 people along, and that's not the idea that I had in my mind what it was going to look like. But then once you start, I started getting to know these people and the people that were turning up and their stories and the impact that I could have on those people, that I didn't care if one person showed up. You know, it was building those relationships and building even a small community of people who you could, like, honestly change lives.
Yeah.
And so we kept going on in Auckland for probably like 6 months, until we had a girl in Christchurch, Julia, who approached me asking me to come on board and run the community down there. So she started running a community down in Christchurch. And then over time, I've just had different people from different areas wanting to start up the same concept in their own cities. So, I mean, I don't want to take credit for this, because it's these people's time and energy and effort that they're putting into the communities. And it was so amazing to have these communities. At one point we had, I think, 17 communities running around, not even just New Zealand, Australia, the States. Yeah, so
it's a seed you planted, you know.
Yeah, so it's been amazing to see these communities come together, and some people that I've met through One Step have definitely become like lifelong friends, and I've seen people flourish through the fact that just getting up and being part of a community and running It's just amazing. So,
and one step is an abbreviation for one step is all it takes.
Totally, yeah. So it came from the idea of one wave is all it takes, which is the same concept but surfing, so yeah. Getting people surfing for mental health.
Yeah.
But recently this year, I've really, at the moment anyway, we've just taken a bit of a step back from one step because it was growing so quickly that it was quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
And to be able to kind of control something that is a not-for-profit organisation that we are making money from, which was never my idea to make money from it,
no.
But it does take time and energy. So we're definitely going to kind of relaunch and re-evolve into something hopefully even bigger and better with more support and keep growing that idea. Because the thing is, and what I've seen being here in Melbourne and seeing all the running communities here, one step is awesome, but the concept of one step sits behind any running community and any community that you're part of, because I think having people around you who are there to support each other, are there to inspire each other and get people moving, it doesn't have to be purely focused on the mental health aspect, but we all know that's kind of the
indirectly
point.
It's all focused on the mental health. So fundamentally it's simply a group of people meeting in one location at a specific time that's been arranged, meeting to walk, to run, to move their body, to be together, to talk.
Totally.
And is it as sort of, I know it's not as organised as parkrun, but is it as simple, like parkrun is 8 o'clock every Saturday morning, you know, period.
Yeah.
Is this...
Yeah, so it's similar. It's each city has
their
meeting location and time and place. But the concept for one step is to keep people connected. So usually we'd do it around a 1 or 2K loop. Depending on where they are running, but that the idea of that is to stop every loop and make sure everyone's still there and talk about, you know, worldly issues, mental health issues, physical issues, anything, but be really open with each other and be able to tap into kind of that side that maybe some running communities don't necessarily talk about.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to see happen with One Step throughout, like in the next sort of 5 years or so?
I just love, you know, I'd love for more people to spread that word and to be connected around the world through the idea of running for mental health. Mental health is obviously, the word mental health has almost become like this, I don't know,
label.
And I guess a lot more people are talking about it in this day and age, and that's awesome, as long as they're talking about it in the right context and not doing it for clout.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. There's
absolutely
a lot of people who I think, because it's kind of become a buzzword, that they want to talk about mental health in maybe the wrong way.
Yeah.
Or not even the wrong way, just for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
So as long as people are talking about mental health for, you know, their own benefit, to be able to help others around them and be very open and honest with themselves and with people, I think that's super important. I think there's still kind of this shiny surface that we all put on to be like, we're living these great lives, which we all know isn't true. You know, everyone goes through hard times.
Of course.
And so I think it's really important that we can open up and talk about that. And the best way to do that is when you are moving, to be honest. I think for some people, sitting down over a coffee and talking about how they feel is really hard. Looking at someone in the eye and really opening up can be quite difficult, whereas when you're running and you are moving together, you are kind of like on this pathway, it's a bit of a leveler, you're able to tap
so
into those
barriers
emotions.
Barriers are broken down. You're not looking at someone, you're both
totally
focused on something else.
Totally.
Yeah.
You can really talk from the heart.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. So the idea is to just continue to grow around the world.
Yeah. We're going to get links and handles to that stuff at the end, but I really appreciate you talking about that. I want to ask you about the Speed Project. I want to ask you about your experience, how it came about, what the hell specifically, what was involved, and what came out of it.
Well,
it's a lot more than a desert run.
what people see, I think Riley Wolf talked a lot about this as well, is what people see on Instagram, which is all just the shiny photos of people running in this beautiful, serene environment, which is definitely part of it, but there's so much more that
goes
on.
I feel like we see the good photos, we hear about the party,
yeah,
it all sounds amazing, and then deep down inside me, I'm like, I couldn't think of anything worse.
Well, to be honest, like, something like the Speed Project, where you are doing something that is so unique, that is pushing your mental and physical boundaries so far, excites me more than wanting to go and run a major marathon or go and, you know, race a 10,000 on track and run a PB. Like, the speed project, it means nothing to nobody. You're not running for money. Your award is a pokey chip from Vegas. Yeah. Like, it doesn't even matter where you come or how fast you run, but you are there to, like, what how Hunter would say it, full send. Yeah. It is the most amazing experience I've ever had and definitely the best race I've ever done.
Let me cut you off quickly. If a listener didn't get the Riley interview, give us a really quick spiel. What the hell is the Spring Speed Project and where did it start?
Yeah, so the Speed Project is a race from LA to Vegas in America.
Straight through. Do they take Route 66?
Like, so there are no rules.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So you can pretty much go whichever way you want. They give you a suggested map to follow, but if you find a faster route, you take the faster route.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool because it's not only a running race, it's quite tactical as well.
Yeah. It's a team's race.
It's a team's race. It's a relay. It's roughly 550K is the map they give you. If you can make it shorter, good on you. But that's all part of it, which is awesome. And within your team, you can either have... You can actually have as many people as you want, but to qualify for the records, you need to have an original team, which is 4 boys and 2 girls, or all girls. So there's a female team or there's the original team. But, I mean, some people go along and they take 8 to 12 runners, which is just probably an easier way to do it, to be honest, because you're not running as many Ks.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter. Like, you're there to be part of a team, to have this crazy experience, and what you go through is, like, will be with me forever. It changed my life.
How many days did it take?
So the first year I did it, we did it with Hunter.
Yeah.
We had 5 boys and 2 girls, and that took us, we ended up 5th overall, and took us 39 hours.
Does your result count, but you can't count for records because you had 5
yeah.
and 2?
So okay. The result still counts,
okay.
But your record doesn't count.
And of the five, in that first year, of the 550 approximate Ks,
mm-hmm.
how many Ks do you reckon you ran?
I ran 93. I'm pretty sure it was 93.
Right, okay.
94, yeah, around there.
Okay, so that's basically 1/5.
Yeah.
For a team that had... Yeah, okay, shit. So you're probably one of the...
Yeah, so myself and... I think it was Matador, I think we ran the most. Oh, he definitely ran more than me.
And was that 2017? No, 2017 was a dream.
2018.
That was... Oh, yeah, 2018.
Yeah.
And then last year?
And then last year, we did it with a group of 6 girls.
Yep.
Which... was just a totally different experience. To me, it was a totally different race because we had 6 girls. We took a different route. It was just so different to the year before, which I was so happy about because I didn't want to have the same experience twice. And the group of girls we ran with were amazing, to be honest. Like, we hadn't met all together. We hadn't met each other as a team until the night before the race. So we were kind of all just going into this blind, just hoping that we'd picked a great bunch of girls. And we did. Like, we were all very similar-minded. We were all, like, kind of tomboys, but we were all there to just work, which made it the best experience ever. And we ended up getting 3rd overall.
Wow.
And 1st female team. And we broke the female record, I think, maybe about, like, 5 hours. I can't remember.
That is
it was 37 cool. hours we ran.
So the car keeps rolling. You don't pull over and sleep.
No.
Car keeps rolling. So it's a support van, is it? I imagine like
yeah.
this, I'm picturing like a combi.
Yes, you have like an RV, a big
oh,
American
right.
RV.
Yeah, cool.
And then you
definitely
have
definitely not
maybe,
a combi van.
I mean, we had
no,
like
that's
one of those,
the east
like,
coast of Australia, Sophie. No, we're not taking a combi through the desert, but thanks
we did,
anyway.
We did have one of those like, I don't know what you'd call it, kind of like a shag and wagon van.
Yeah.
As well as our RV, which
yeah.
was really good. So you could split the team up if you need to at any point. And you have this idea that you're going to get some sleep throughout the race, but...
You don't.
No. Right. You really don't. Like, even when you may find a couple of hours free where you've just run and you've got 2 hours before your next run, and you've got this idea that you're going to go lay down for an hour, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
There's so much going on.
Wow.
But it was so cool. Like... The first year I did it, when I did it with Hunter, it was my first experience with Hunter, and it's when I first met Andy Sargent, Riley Wolf, Kieran Ryan, those boys. And now I look back and like that
shaped
the
your
reason
life.
I'm in Melbourne is mostly because of those guys, and I'm here because I want to run with them, and the relationship I've built with them is going to be forever. So it's pretty crazy.
How did you get into the Speed Project? Through Nike?
Matty Dorr, who was a Nike run coach in Melbourne, he was looking for a female, and I obviously knew him through Nike, and he approached me quite early on, maybe October, November the year before, asking if I wanted to be part of it. And I had seen it before, and to be honest, it was pretty unknown at the time. No one really knew what the Speed Project was. I don't even know how I found this video online, but it would have been maybe a year before this. I'd seen a video of the original race that the guys did, Nils and Blue, who are now my good friends as well. And I watched this race and I was like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. That's like, I want to do that. But I never thought I would do it because I didn't think I'd have the opportunity. So when Maddie Dore came to me and asked me to be part of it, I was like, 100%, I'll put any other race or whatever I had going on aside, because this is like, I can tell.
See, you put out to the universe and see what manifests.
Yeah.
So you met the guys. That's a nice segue into Hunter. You met the guys that way. You met Riley, Sarge, Kieran, obviously the other ones on the team as well.
Yeah.
And that forged what is now, you know, a formidable relationship with these guys.
Yeah.
Talk to us about the role that Hunter Athletics plays in your life. And it's probably good timing this interview because off the back of Riley's interview with Julian a week or so ago. So now I think our listeners have a clearer understanding. You are a pivotal character down at Hunter in terms of naturally leading and inspiring, but also just... I think it's more just the way you're nurturing and sort of compassionate, caring nature towards people, and then you're just a workhorse on the track. So it's kind of everything. Talk to us about Hunter.
Yeah, I think, thanks. So if I just, like, I don't really see myself as one of the key players in that community, because there are so many. I think there's so many people who bring something different to that community, and I think that's the beautiful thing about it.
Yeah.
And so obviously the three boys who are the founders are our key leaders, but everyone has something that's that they bring to it. And you know, even some of the guys that turn up and maybe are running at the back of the pack, they inspire me, you know, and they probably have no idea how much they inspire me. But some of those guys inspire me more than some of the elite runners I know, you know, because of what they do and how hard they work and the reason they're there. For me, that's more than just, you know, running times and getting medals. So Hunter to me is just like the epitome of community and how supportive people can be in the right situations. And I feel so lucky to be part of it. When I saw what the guys were doing in Melbourne, and I was still based back in Auckland, so I've only been in Melbourne for about 8 months now, I was so jealous of the community that was going on here, and it was something that I would have loved to start in Auckland, but the way that Auckland is laid out and how people stay in kind of their own circles, it's quite hard to get the same sort of vibe going on over there. So when I was offered a role to contract over here for Nike, huge part of that decision was, well, Hunter is here, the boys are here, I'm going to have people to train with every day.
Yeah.
I want to be part of that, and that definitely helped get me over here. So as soon as I got here and jumped into that group, I knew I was in the right place for me.
Yeah.
I realised that too, maybe the elite runners looking at me training with what many people see as a community run group, maybe not be seen as like the best opportunity or place for me, but for me it's absolutely perfect. I would rather run with those guys than be part of any elite squad. So it's not only fulfilling my running potential, but it's fulfilling me as a person and in my life, and makes me happy. And it's just super inspiring to be part of, you know, we've got like over 100, maybe 150 people turning up to sessions. And everyone leaves so happy, you know.
But I mean, I witnessed firsthand last Tuesday when we wanted to do 400s, you had 15 on the program. The session was to be 1K reps, but you were prepping for Melbourne Uni 5K. And as soon as you said that you wanted to do fours, two or three guys just go, yep, we'll pace you.
Yeah.
And they just jump over, they just jump in.
Yeah.
Everyone wants, kind of, all those boys just really want to beat you, but they won't. no, it's not a competition, it's not a race. But a few just go, Gergs is one. He just goes, yeah, I'll do fours with you, just to get you through your fours.
It's amazing. You know what I mean? The support those guys give me is so amazing. And I think, like, a lot of girls complain about, you know, there's a lot of things, I guess, as a female to complain about as a female athlete, but having guys 24/7 to rely on and to have push us through our paces, we're so lucky to have that. And so it's something that we should not take for granted, because I'm so lucky. Those boys, are so willing to just jump in whenever I need them, push me. And, like, I guess in some situations I would push them as well, which I kind of like love to be able to help the dudes out.
Yeah.
But that's the thing about Hunter. There's always going to be someone there, if not many people, who will put their hands up to be there for you. So, yeah. And like there's definitely a lot of the time where I am maybe not doing the same session as what Hunter is doing, but even just being there around them and doing my session next to them is more than I can imagine in terms of support. Energy. So, yeah.
Something that stands out so clearly with you, and it's in what people said about you, and it's in what we know, and it's the story that you tell, is, and I can't help dialing back to that coach from school who, you know, the 800 yeah. meter coach, is just do it for the love of it. Don't do it for the what can be measured, and you know, that kind of thing. And I think now you've built such a formidable social media platform that you are not some social media influencer, blah blah blah, but it's you are actually utilizing and tapping into your platform for the better. And you've had the opportunity, I guess, to write for Tempo Journal and to speak about things that are close to you. One Step is a classic example of speaking about something and actioning something that's close to your heart. But I want to actually better understand how you're using your platform to particularly influence women. Through also your online coaching stuff, through your opportunities with Nike, Hunter, Tempo, Speed Project, all these things. Talk to me about the causes closest to your heart, mental health being one of them, and I really appreciated that conversation. But also, you and I have spoken a lot about the work that we feel we have to do, with that we are humbled and honoured to do, to better inspire and educate women in the community. Mostly to tell them that they are not small men and that they are their own body and their own person. Let's tap into your platform and the platform that you have and how you're using that to share some of your... You've probably got about 15 key messages. We might go with one or two today and then get you on for future women's episodes where we can dive into what means the most to yourself.
Yeah, definitely women and female athletes is something that is a key focus for me and where I see so much work needs to be done. And I think, yes, growing up and going to an all-girls school and having a female coach who focused on our love and passion for running versus running for times ignited it for me. And then I guess the next phase for me was heading into a high school in Auckland, and I worked with a private girls' school for 5 years and coached girls in that school. And so I took girls on when they were 9 and 10 years old, and then by the time I left last year, which was the hardest thing to do, you know, these girls are 15. And so that's a huge key part of their lives growing up and turning into adults, and I was so lucky to be part of it. And I honestly get tears in my eyes when I think about like the pressure that those girls are under. And I just remember when I was at school and a teenager and how much I compared myself to the girls in my class and what I looked like and, you know, what they were, I guess, their weight, how they're eating, like how they're acting, the attention they were getting. That was such a huge focus of mine as a teenage girl. And now I look at these girls growing up and they not only have the girls in their class to compare themselves to, they have, you know, these Instagram influencers where the majority of the time these photos have been, you know, changed up the way that they look. They're just comparing to these unrealistic standards. And as an athlete, it's a really not easy way, but I would say a much easier way to appreciate your body for what it can do than what it looks like. It's a key way to look at your body in a totally different way than just looking at it in an aesthetic way. And so that's why I'm so passionate about sport and getting girls into sport and getting girls running, because they can finally be happy with how they feel versus what they look like. And so for me, I've never run to lose weight. I mean, when I was younger, I was, you know, from the years of 12 to probably 16, all I wanted to be was skinny, but I didn't run to be skinny. I stopped eating to be skinny, or I was bulimic for a few years to be skinny. You know, but I didn't run to be skinny. And I've never gone out being like, oh, I have to go for a run because I have to lose a certain amount of weight. And so to me, I really want to spread this message and help girls understand that your body is so much more than what it looks like. And through running, you can do that. And so I guess for me, that's a huge focus in educating women. I mean, men as well, but focus on the benefits of what running can do for you, how it makes you feel, how happy you can be, how mentally healthy you can be, not, oh, I have to go out and run a certain distance or a certain time because I need to lose a certain amount of weight, or I've got to run this time to impress all these people, or I have to run this speed so to put it on Strava because I've got 100 people watching me on Strava, you know? It's like, do it for you and how you feel. And, you know, like I said, your times and your results and your fitness and your speed, that will all come if you're not focusing on it. You know, if you focus on it too much and you keep going, I'm so slow, I want to get faster, it's so hard to be able to tap into that because you're just focusing on the negatives the whole time. Whereas if you're like, I just want to run, I want to go and do the speed session, it's going to be so fun, I'm going to do 10 1Ks and it's going to be hard, but I'm going to feel great at the end of it. You get your speed out of that. You are going to get faster, but you're not focusing on that.
Yeah.
So I think it's a huge mind shift that I think people need to take, and it's going to take time, but I think pulling away from kind of like, A, the data and the numbers. I definitely have an issue with, you know, how much technology there is out there at the moment and people focusing on that way too much than actually how they feel. And then the way that they look. I just don't think we should ever run to get skinnier legs or, you know, a smaller waist. Like, that's not, you know, when you're on your deathbed, you're not going to be so thankful that you've got a smaller waist from all that running. But you could be happier because you've lived a more clearer, purposeful life. Because
the relationships you built, the places you went to, because of your running. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I also want to, and this is sort of staying on the topic of you realizing that running is so much more than teams you make and uniforms that you wear and times you run, and tap into the lessons that you learn, and if it's not too raw, to go back to July last year and Gold Coast Marathon and the experience around that. So talk to me about, you know, the couple of months leading in and the emphasis you'd placed on that race, and I guess what that race, you know, before you towed the line, what it was, you know, supposed to mean to you and how you defined it. And then, I guess, I mean, that can just be as brief as you want, but then the learnings that came from it and the platform that you've, I guess, you know, ricocheted off from that whole experience.
Yeah, I think, so last year I decided at the start of last year that I was all in and that running was going to be, you know, my main focus aside from my business and everything else going on. I wanted to be on the world stage. And with a world championship in 2019, I thought with the standard that was out, it was very achievable for me. And I was like, this is kind of like now or never, let's just drop everything and go for it. And so I made the decision to head to America for a couple of months to spend some time over there with my coach at the time, Lou Benedin, who's an amazing athlete himself, and train towards a qualification race, which was going to be the Gold Coast Marathon.
Even though we're not into numbers, can you just tell me, what was your PB at that time, and what did you think you had to run?
So it was 2:39.01.
Okay, so you run 2:39.01.
Qualification was 2:37.
Okay, so we're looking at 90 seconds to get into it.
And I hadn't run a PB for the marathon for 4 years.
Okay.
I think, yeah. Cool. I hadn't run a PB since I run my first marathon in 2015.
Yeah.
And so I headed to the States, and I knew what I was capable of, and I knew, I guess, what in terms of racing. So I knew I was capable of a 2:37. I probably didn't at the time realize what I was capable of in terms of training, because once I got to America and was under Blue's coaching, it pushed me to places and trainings that I had never done before, and we were just on an intense schedule. So I loved it. I thrived because I loved challenging myself and doing things that I didn't think was possible. And so every day we were just grinding, we were doing sessions, you know, we'd do a 30k session in the morning, 20k session at night. There were times where we were just smashing ourselves. And at the time I was loving it. And so I ended up leaving the States probably 4 weeks before Gold Coast Marathon, in probably the best shape of my life. I felt so good and I was ready to race, but I had 4 weeks to go.
Yeah.
And so I came to Australia and spent probably 2 weeks up in Brisbane and trained just by myself up there, which was pretty hard being alone. And then I came to Melbourne for a week, and purely because I wanted to come hang out with my friends. and it was so cold and I got super sick like the moment I landed. So I spent probably 7 days really sick trying to get through my last key sessions before the marathon. And I knew that I had already peaked. I knew that I was not in a position to go and run a marathon 2 weeks later. And I tried my hardest to push kind of that negative mindset out and try and be like, I can do this. Like, I've trained so hard. I'm ready. I feel good. And even once I got to Gold Coast maybe 5 days before the race, I was still battling with the flu. And I'm not sure. Like, I just did not feel good. And I was kind of on that downhill.
It was like prolonged arousal, like when you're just up, yeah, up for so long that your immune system becomes so compromised.
Totally.
And
like, I think it was a mixture of getting sick, but yeah, it was also
But that's why you got sick, that yeah, prolonged arousal, totally, just being yeah, up for so long.
Yeah, I'd never trained so hard in my life, and I think I was trying to train too hard for too long.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the training was wrong. I probably should have started that heavy block of training a little later.
Yeah.
Which to me, like, learning curves.
Yeah. So you get to the Gold Coast.
So I get to Gold Coast, not feeling great, but still believing that I was going to do it. I remember at the start line, we're lining up, it is terrible conditions, super windy, raining, not nice at all. And I just remember thinking to myself, oh, in a couple of hours, I'm going to be a World Champs qualifier. Like, I really believed that it was going to happen, and to the point, like, I just did not have any doubt in my mind that it wasn't. I didn't even imagine that something could go wrong.
Yeah.
Because I thought I deserved that result, because I trained so hard. There was part of me being like, well, it would be just so unfair if something went wrong, so it's not, of course it's not going to go wrong. Like, I've given
you
it
decided.
Everything. Yeah. So I started the race, and the first half, to be honest, I felt pretty good. I had a pretty good pack who were moving slightly faster than what I wanted, but I thought I either sit with the pack and go a little bit quicker or hang back and run by myself.
Yeah.
So at 21k, I think we went through in 76:45,
okay,
which is obviously a bit quicker than 2:37 pace.
What is that per k pace? 1:16:45.
I think we were running 3:35s maybe.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, around.
It'd be about that.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And you were feeling okay?
I felt okay.
Yep.
And then 3Ks later, I started going downhill. And I remember at 28K just being like, oh, I feel like crap. And my hip was like giving me a huge grief. My calf was giving me grief. Like pain that I just hadn't felt in training ever.
Yeah.
And at 30K, which if you've done the Gold Coast Marathon, you'd know you go past the start-finish line, which is a pretty rough...
Darkest,
pretty hard. You kind of have to Australia. Block it out. And my mum was there with my little niece and my sister.
Why do parents stand there?
I don't
my mum stood there too. I was like, what are you doing?
I can wish I didn't see her, to be honest. But I saw her and I ran up to her and I just was almost like hyperventilating because I was trying to cry, but trying not to cry, but...
Yeah.
I was like, Mum, I'm so sore, like my calf, my hip, and like, ugh. And she just looked at me and she's like, you know, you can stop. Like, you don't have to do it. And like that, until that moment, it had crossed my mind. And then I was like, because I'm so determined, and if someone tells me to do something, I'll do the opposite.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I'm going to keep going. So I literally hobbled off and ran another K. And then once I got past that huge crowd and there were no people, I sat on the curb and just started crying. Yeah, and I, at that time, with the moment I had to click my garment and be like, that's it.
Oh,
that
God.
Was the worst. Like, I just remember being like, I can't believe. Like, I trained hard for 3 or 4 months, and in the big scheme of things, that's nothing, but at the time, it just felt like so much.
Yeah.
And so, I hobbled off the course, and they popped me in the car, and were trying to take me back to my mum, but they couldn't get back to the start line. It was like this massive debacle, and I was just like bawling with these people I didn't even know. It's a kind of a serene moment. I was like, this is so odd and weird, and I just do not want to be here anymore. And so for, you know, that night, I remember getting into bed, and in my head, my life was falling apart, which sounds crazy because it's running, and it's just a running race. But I was like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing with my life? I've invested everything into this. I haven't made it. What's the point of it? I was, like, doubting my entire worth because of one race. Mm. And
you thought you'd be defined by that?
I thought I would be defined by it, and I thought I'd let so many people down, and that this whole elite athlete life that I always thought that I would be in kind of just, like, slipped away from me in one moment. And now I'm like, why would you allow sport? Like, I love sport, but do not let sport define who you are. Sport should complement everything you do and teach you life skills and bring you community, but it shouldn't define you as a person. But it did for me, and I just honestly was like questioning my entire worth in my life, and I was like, I don't even want to be here anymore. Like, it was that bad. And then it wasn't long, I'd say 48 hours later, I'd signed up to do Sunshine Coast Marathon 4 weeks later. And I knew I had to take immediate action because of my mental health. Yep. And I needed something else to focus on than the negatives of running. And so I decided to get back on the horse pretty soon after. And actually, I didn't really do too much training between Gold Coast and Sunshine Coast. I just jogged, and I think I did one 25k run, and that was my long run for the 4 weeks. And
but at this point, you'd let go of Doha, so let go of the World Champs.
Let go of Doha.
Just to clarify, because people are going to be listening thinking you went to Sunshine Coast to run a qualifier.
No. I was like, this is not happening.
The ship sailed.
The ship has sailed, and I'm not going to be representing NZ at the World Champs. And
But the sun still rose.
I still had running. It's not like I had broken my leg and couldn't run again. Like, I was still healthy.
Yeah.
So I, decided to just get out there and went to Sunshine Coast with no expectation, no pressure. I had no idea of what time I was going to run.
Yeah.
Didn't even look at my clock. Just ran to feel, and absolutely loved it and had best time. And then from that moment, I was just like, I just want to run because I love it. I don't want to run to, you know, impress people or set records or break PBs or anything like that. To me, it's like running is such a pure sport, and that's the way it should be. And that's
going all the way back to that coach, that first coach at school.
Totally.
You said you do it because you love it.
And if you don't love it, don't do it. You know, like, you shouldn't do anything in life that makes you feel terrible about yourself.
Yeah.
And so I realised that, you know, 99% of the time running makes me feel good, but that 1% after that race made me feel terrible. And I was like, I can't let that ruin the rest of my love for it. So I decided to kind of, at that moment, just run for myself and run for my love and just chase the dream of being happy versus, like, being this athlete that in my mind I'd always thought I was.
And affect positive change in other people.
Yeah.
And then the disclaimer, or the small print that, you know, you won't say but I can say, is that off the back of that, with this complete mentality shift and attitude shift and doing it for all these different reasons to what you would have defined or specified prior to Gold Coast, you've run PBs in every distance, you know, you've come out and while running around high-fiving people at Burnley with a huge squad at Hunter, you've run a 72-minute half, qualifying you for World Half Marathon Championships, we'll get to that in a minute, 10K PB on the track. You're not even a 5K runner and you've run 15:42, got well inside the top 10 performance at the recent Melbourne Track Classic, which doubled as the Australian Championship, which was the deepest field of female 5,000 meter runners ever, probably. Big call there, Sophie. We've had an Olympics in this country, but anyway, I'll just go with that. And it just, you know, what a lesson for our listeners and for our community, that just that mental shift.
Yeah.
Of just, I don't really care about the numbers and the splits and the times, and that's why I said we'll come full circle in this interview and we'll laugh that at the very start I defined you by your times because that's not what you are. That's not who you are. That's not what you do. And I actually listened to a really good quote by Neroli Meadows, the sports journalist, just last week. And she said, the great thing about sport is that one footy game or that one marathon or that whatever it is, that one horse race, it means so, 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 so much to us. but it means nothing.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually nothing.
It's the beauty of sport.
Yeah.
And that's all it should be, you know?
It's every cell of your body, every emotional, physical cell, it means so much. But guess what?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything. Exactly. Like, it's... Yeah. But just to tap into, because people are going to be like, oh my God, wait, she did get that NZ singlet, qualified for the World Half Marathon Championships. Bags were almost packed for Poland to race this coming March, the 29th, which is a few weeks away, but that's actually been cancelled.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, the half marathon world champs was definitely not something that I was even aware was happening, to be honest, until Athletics New Zealand posted applications for it. And once I read the application and realised I'd already run the time, I thought, well, you know, I maybe missed Doha, but maybe this is my world championship. And I put my application in and got the spot, and
alongside a loaded Mansfield.
Yeah, there's an amazing group of men who were also going to be racing. And I was excited for the championship, but then I think through the last 8 months and the shift that I've had mentally, I was also like, it excites me, but, you know, running with my hunters, like, in a half marathon here excites me just as much, to be honest. But taking, you know, not taking for granted the opportunity to put on a New Zealand singlet and represent your country is pretty big. So I was pumped to be doing it for that reason. Mm. And then once it got postponed, so it's postponed until October, I was pretty devastated, to be honest. I didn't think, because I obviously knew it was on the cards, but I didn't think that they would actually can the elite world champs. I thought they can the kind of like the big race. And then once I saw it was canned, I initially was pretty disheartened because I've been training for the last 3 or 4 months for it as my key focus. And now that it's not on, I'm kind of like in this like limbo of like, what am I actually training for? And I think, you know, it's happening all around the world and we're seeing so many races at the moment getting cancelled and people who are really disheartened, devastated because they've put so much into it. But what we need to realise is we are so fortunate to have the opportunity to run, and we're so lucky to have, you know, healthy bodies to allow us to get up each day and go outside. And whether we're running, you know, in Australia or New Zealand or in Poland, it doesn't really matter. We're able to do it, so we need to kind of appreciate that and not get too caught up in the whole world of the races being cancelled, because it's in the big scheme of things, it's really not that bad.
The race is just the destination, and it's the journey that counts, I think. Yeah. Coronavirus can take your race away, but it cannot take your your freedom. Liz, we could actually be here all day, but we won't be. Couple of last things. Talk me through a typical training week, Monday to Sunday. What do you do?
Yeah, so at the moment, in training for the half marathon, Monday's usually my easy day. So I'll usually do a double run, easy 30 or 40 in the morning and easy 30 or 40 at night. That is not case.
Yes. Thanks, Blue.
Tuesday, I will usually do some sort of speed work in the morning. So I'll go along to Hunter, and whether we're doing K repeats or we might be doing, sometimes I'll just do like long tempos. So I run pretty well off just doing steady states. So just running 30 to 40, maybe 50 minutes of like half marathon pace or something that's not pushing it too quick.
Yep, that's a workout.
Then Tuesday evenings I'll usually double. So I'll do an easy jog. And I'm terrible afternoon runner. So max I'll do in the afternoon would be 40 minutes, but most of the time it's 30 and it's just very slow.
Yep.
Wednesday morning I would usually do like a longer kind of comfortable run. Maybe 90 minutes comfortable. And then depending on how I'm feeling, I may either jump on the bike or do a light jog in the afternoon. Thursdays, I will do... So I kind of switch speed between Tuesdays and Thursdays. Sometimes I'll do Tuesdays, sometimes Thursday. But if I've done speed on a Tuesday, I'll probably just do like a 75-minute run in strides on a Thursday.
Yep.
I usually only do one speed track workout a week. And then... I would usually gym on a Thursday evening. I do quite a bit of strength training just because I have, you know, issues and niggles that come up if I don't do it. So it's definitely something that I'm quite big on. Fridays are easy, which would either just be like a 50 minute easy run in the morning or 30 in the morning, 30 at night. Saturdays are my long run days, which I love doing long runs on Saturdays, just because it allows me to coach or just hang or just chill on a Sunday. So Saturday at the moment I'm doing anything between like 30 and 34k, and that's mixed up with some every second week I'll usually do some efforts within that. So it might be like 3k on, 2k off, or it might be like steady state half an hour block within that run, or and then other weeks it will just be like a comfortable 30 to 35 at say 410 to 420s. So I feel like every second week I need to just run comfortably.
Yeah.
If I did a workout every Saturday in my long run, it would take too much out of me.
Yeah.
And then Sundays I usually just do like an easy jog in the morning, maybe 70 to 80 minutes.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
So is that about 180k?
No. I think the biggest week I've done is maybe 170, but at the moment I would say that's more around 150 to 160.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be alright.
Yeah.
Awesome. Lydia, who inspires you?
That's a really hard question because there's so many people.
Yeah.
I think people probably think, you know, like the Shalane Flanagans of the world inspire me, and they do to a degree, but it's the people around me that touch me the most. Mm. I think it's the people that I see at the track every second day, the hunters that are around me, you know, people that I work with, the athletes like I work with. I have athletes who I work with through just online coaching who I'd never even met, but they send me messages weekly on the updates from their runs, and they're starting out as walk runners, you know, and then eventually they're running and they're telling me their stories and their journeys of how they've, you know, changed their entire life because they've become a runner. And that stuff inspires me the most because it's actually so moving that you hear people are, you know, being so affected by this.
Actually,
sport.
Your tiny way to make the world a better place.
Yeah, so like, actually, I mean, these people would have no idea they inspire me so much, but they do. And yeah, I think I'm pretty lucky to be able to do what I do.
Yeah. What's on for 2020?
Well, after talking about coronavirus, it's a pretty hard one to to pinpoint what is going to happen. But the idea at the moment, I've got quite a few races lined up.
Let's say the world's healthy. And,
yes.
Or, well, you know, whatever. Let's say nothing's been cancelled.
Yeah.
Or moving forward, anything that you're planning is going to happen.
The idea is to run a half in the next few weeks.
Yep.
Hopefully Canberra, but we'll see.
Yes.
And then I want to go for a fast 10K on the road in probably June.
Yep.
Hopefully down in Tassie.
Bonnie, great.
And then I want to go to Gold Coast and run the half there and hopefully run pretty well because I know they always get a strong field.
Yes.
And then go on and run Sunshine Coast again, but not the marathon. I'll probably do 10 or half there.
Yep.
And then I'll go on to run a marathon, so I'm hoping to run Chicago.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. So it's some, road races mapped out across the next few months.
But it's all pretty much working towards Chicago Marathon. That will be the big focus for the year. But like I said, I'm trying not to invest too much myself into one goal.
Yeah.
I kind of want to just take these little stepping stones, enjoy the moments, and just go on the journey, and whatever happens at Chicago happens.
Yeah. Just in case people have only just worked this out, we tend to talk more about the journey, not the destination. I don't know if there's been a bit of a theme with this podcast, but... And last thing, in 10 years' time, what do you hope you will look back and see that you achieved over these last 10 years? So if we were sitting here in March 2030... What do you want to
I'm so much of a live day to day at the moment and just kind of make the most of the moment. So it's really hard to kind of picture myself in 10 years, but maybe as an adult I should maybe start doing it more.
What is a 5-year plan?
I think for me in 10 years I want to look back and I just want to be able to say that I was able to invest myself as much as I could into others. Like, I really want to be able to change people's lives and have a true impact on people. And when people ask me what I do, I hate that question, but I also, like, my answer to them is I am an investor.
Yep.
And I think they think I'm like really smart and work in a bank or something, but I invest myself into myself and I invest my time into others, and I think that's the most important thing that anyone can do, and I want to be able to make impacts and change people's lives. And I think for me, because of my knowledge and experience through running is kind of like the first thing that comes to mind when I can do that. So whatever that looks like, who knows, but I definitely want to keep kind of growing the running world and changing perspectives of how they see people see sport, and especially for females.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Liz, thank you for your time.
Thanks,
I'm going to finish by getting your social media handles and a few little things that to enable people to find you, and also ask you if you will come back on this podcast with me and we can dive deeper into some of those issues, particularly some of the more feminine specific, female specific ones. I really want to drum up a podcast conversation episode of the comparison trap and just really dive into that, and I'd love to do that with you. So this is not the last you've heard of Lydia, but before we go, how do people find you on Instagram?
At Lydia Odio.
LYDIAODO.
Yeah.
Cool. One Step, tell us how to find that.
One Step Is All It Takes is on Instagram.
Okay. At One Step Is All It Takes.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then my own website is just lydiaodonnell.com.
lydiaodonnell.com.
Yeah.
Two N's, two L's.
Two L's, yeah.
Cool. And two N's, two L's. Lydia.com.
Yeah. Yep. And One Step Is One Step Is All It Takes.com. So,
awesome. Lydia does online coaching for people. So if someone was interested in that, would they best find you via your website?
Via website is the best way to go.
Okay.
But if they have questions, you can just reach out to me on Instagram.
Awesome. Yeah. Liz, thanks for your time.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
It's been awesome. And yeah, can't wait to have you back on.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Thanks. Doesn't matter if it don't come back. Under the sun.